Hi, this is Tony Franklin of the firm Blue Murder, and most recently of Rated X. It's great to be on Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott here.
Richie.
And welcoming you to 2025 here in the world of Focus on Metal.
This is your one episode of the year.
Maybe. That's it. We're doing 601 and that's it. We're breaking a new thing, single episode type of deal. But yeah, you know, the holidays and shit goes on and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of we have fun doing it. People have fun listening to us. We still got lots of people that listen, and they wait patiently until we decide to put a new episode out. Here it is, 601. So, how we doing, man?
I'm good.
Good.
Because it's been a while, there's a lot of shit going on that we can talk about.
I know, it is. First thing I just want to do is, and because he's a part of Focus on Metal, and, you know, he's also helped us out a lot with getting us together with people and everything, is that... Our co-conspirator Brian Heaton has a brand new book that is due out,
mm-hmm.
and it's the biography of Jason Slater. It's called For the Sake of Supposing, and it is available for pre-order right now on Amazon as only the Kindle edition. And Brian said that on, what is it going to be? It should be that on March 8th, the regular print edition should also go on sale on Amazon. So, you know, check that out. Said, just go to Amazon, look for Jason Slater For the Sake of Supposing. Probably just put Jason Slater. It'll come up. And it's a great book. And it would be a great book even if he doesn't mention Richie twice in the book. So,
wow.
I think you're on page 129 and 158, I think.
Okay.
Backing up things that happened because Jason talked to you about them on the show.
Okay.
For those people new to the show, we've had Jason on the show three different times. We had two back-to-back episodes in 2018, and then we had him on again in 2019. And very candid dude, and you can read all about his life and everything in Brian's new book. Also, I should mention that Brian's prior book, Roads to Madness, which is the touring history of Queensryche, it used to be pretty limited as to where you could get it. It is now available on Amazon, and it's actually on Amazon at a really great price of $42. It's a great coffee table book, lots of good stuff in there. So, again, go and check that out on Amazon. Look for Roads to Madness. And if you're into Queensryche, this is another whole facet of their career with touring. And you'll really dig this one as well. Brian's done a couple of things with Queensryche books. And that was one of his first, like, you know, by himself deals. So, like I said, check that out and go and keep an eye out for the Jason Slater book.
Yeah. Looking forward to reading that. I actually got to be a bit more friendly with Jason than just a regular chat. An interview, like we'd actually call each other every now and again afterwards, like, or he'd hit me up. I remember he called me one time. I was driving home a few years ago and he started asking me all these technical questions about, you know, doing a podcast. And I'm like, you're asking the wrong guy. You need to ask Scott. I just do the interviews. So, but yeah, that was funny. He wanted to kind of get into that end of it.
Yeah.
And he had the stories. Told me some great ones about the Queensryche albums he did. I actually spoke to Brian once or twice. I'm pretty good friends with Brian Heaton anyway.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about the book.
Yeah.
And one of the questions I asked him was, you know, what sort of market would a Jason Slater book?
Mm.
I didn't realize how big the band he was in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before he did the Queensryche albums were, because I'm in Ireland. They're not that big in Ireland, and they're big in the US.
Right.
And he said they were a very big band over here.
Yeah, so I think you'll be surprised when you read it. And the other thing is, too, is that, you know, there's a good chunk of Queensryche history within the book. There's a big giant curtain pulled back on this as well. And this isn't just, this isn't clickbait. This is really honest assessment. And there's stuff that, as much as we've talked with Brian and everything else, that there's things that he finally reveals in the book that he's never revealed before.
Publicly.
Yes.
Like in interviews, yeah.
Yeah. Or even stuff where he stopped short of telling me things. And I've known about this book going, that it was going to be going on for well over a year now.
Yeah.
But Brian knows, he tells me and it just goes in my skull and it doesn't go out anywhere.
Yeah, he told me months ago and he said not to tell anyone and I didn't.
Yeah. And he's already busy on his next one and no, I can't say what it is.
Mm.
but again, go, you know, if you're interested, definitely check that out. Probably just even, like I said, go up to Amazon, just put in Jason Slater and you should get that for the sake of supposing book come up. And, you know, you got the Kindle one, you can get that like now. And if you want the actual book, then that should get listed up on Amazon on the 8th.
Okay. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that, that I got that out of the way. And, you know, Brian's always been good to us and I honestly enjoyed the book. So just like we used to do, why not promote it? Right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yep. Excellent.
Cool. That's out of the way. I had something real quick. Just it's stupid. And to be honest, I've been unable.
Yeah, but the whole show is stupid.
is I've been unable to pin down where this source is. But on, I want to say Rob Music TV, last week, a couple weeks ago, dude was on there and he was talking about the, what he said was the most Shazammed song of 2024. Now, I've done the back looking to see that. I couldn't find this song listed at all in the top 10 of it. And then I went to the YouTube notes and it said from iTunes Shazam. So I looked through there and I still can't find it. But I mean, I don't think he really would make it up either. But from this video, obviously this is kind of a metal based YouTube channel. What do you think the top Shazammed song was?
What's Shazammed?
Shazam's an app on the phone. So you're like, hey, what's this song? And you let Shazam hear it and it goes, oh, it's blah, blah, blah.
Metal song?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably not a metal song.
Well, it is. It's a metal song. Well, the artist that did it would probably not say it was a metal song.
It's not Post Malone or someone like that, is it?
No.
Is it an old act?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's not Paranoid, is it?
No. No.
I'm way off.
No, the reason he even had it was, and I agree with him, I was like, what? It was Ace of Spades.
Motorhead.
Now, if there's one thing with a lot of Motorhead things is Lemmy will repeat the same damn title over and over and over again, more than any other lyric in the damn song. It's just kind of a thing Lemmy does. So how could you not know the name of the song is Ace of Spades? It's like it's every 30 seconds it's said. It's like I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Really? Like, they had to Shazam that?
Yeah, well, that's technology for you. Everybody's dumb.
It's true. Everybody is dumb. Getting stupider every day. But yeah, I just was like, I have to share this with Richie. It just blew my mind.
Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that.
what's next this year is going to be Overkill, like, at least with Paranoid, it's like...
He says it once or twice, doesn't he?
You know, it's that one would be like more difficult as opposed to make maybe Iron Man or something, right? But Ace of Spades, it's like a constant repeat.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I never liked Paranoid, the song. It's okay. But it has this iconic status, but even on that album, how many more songs on that 8-song record are better than Paranoid? And I know it was a throwaway. And we're going on a tangent here.
Yeah, it is. And it's a selection by what the record company wanted and all that. But I got to remember, too, like, me hearing that was like, whoa, holy crap. But you'd already heard a whole bunch of other shit before you ever heard that.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of like, that's not like, well, the next heaviest thing. It's like, oh, yeah, that song. So a little different frame of reference, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. All right. So what are we talking about next?
Well, I know you had a couple things you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of them definitely, it was like, what the hell was Sykes. You know, I remember, and I always tell you this quote to everybody, like when we talked to Carmine and asked him about Blue Murder. And he would always be, I'd love to do Blue Murder. I'd love to get them.
And Tony Franklin, we spoke to him too.
Can't get John out of the house. That's what he used to always say. Can't get John out of the house. Now John won't be out of the house at all. So, that was a hit.
Yeah, 65 years old, cancer.
Yeah. And the other weird thing too is how many people saw that and only know him from the 87 album, which is sad. And how many people don't know him at all?
Well, I'd say there's a lot of people don't know him at all outside of the hard rock genre. They might know the songs.
Yeah.
From MTV, they might, oh yeah, Is This Love, Still of the Night, but the band you saw on the videos wasn't John Sykes.
Right.
He didn't have that band in the videos.
Yeah.
But when did you first hear John? What album got you? Was it Tigers of Hantang? Tigers of Hantang.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think...
I always would have loved to have seen how that would have worked with Jess instead of Devereaux, but yeah, it's definitely was one of those things where he comes in there. What's that? 81?
Yeah, it would have been early 80s.
Right?
Yeah, because Lizzie was 83.
I think that in the next album with him
was
as well.
Was it Crazy Night?
Yeah, they're both 81. It's just it's very similar to what he did with Thin Lizzy, like pretty much everything where he just brought something else in and you might not have known who it was, but you're like, something changed here. And it's not just the sound of the guitar, it's songwriting, it's dynamics, it's like all kinds of stuff that just happened when he hit a band.
Yeah. The first time I heard him was Thin Lizzy.
Yeah.
I think, what was I? I would have been about 15 at that stage. I was into like pop music and stuff like that. And my cousins, who were a little bit older than me, had all these albums. So I used to go, I had two aunts, so I'd go to their houses and the kids still lived there. So
one of
my cousins had, she had U2 and Simple Minds were probably her two favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember she had Denim and Leather, Thunder and Lightning. And there was one other record that she had. But I remember those two sticking out to me saying, who's Saxon? Who are they?
Yeah.
You know, Thunder and Lightning, Lizzie, and I knew Jailbreak and Boys Are Back in Town, but I put on Thunder and Lightning,
album there.
And I'm like, it's a little bit heavier. And then there was Slided In, of course, the two versions of that, you know, and Sykes didn't actually write any of that album. He just played on the US version after it had already been written and recorded. And the 87 record.
Yep.
Which for a lot of people was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
In the guitar Tony has on that is amazing.
Well, that whole thing was, we've talked about this before.
Little Milton.
It's the dynamics, it's the amount of compression, it's the levels. That was one of these cornerstone albums where a lot of things that followed it, maybe partly because of the success of it, but it changed the way that the albums were mixed and presented after that.
Yeah. I always felt with that record, and I'm in the minority here, that when that album came out and I heard it, I always thought that the guitar sound was incredible on it, but I always thought that the drum and bass sound was not very good on it. Mm. I thought that the production overall wasn't great, but it had a huge guitar sound and it had Coverdale's vocals. But when I compared that to some other albums that came out at the time, I didn't understand this. Oh my God, the production on this is amazing. I always felt, the guitar sound is amazing and the vocals are great, but I'm not a fan of the drum sound on it.
Yeah, well, I think too that where that is too, there's a changeover point there and So they were still mixing for albums as well. And so you couldn't have that same huge sound on the album. I mean, it's even more important on an album to be able to get that soundscape right than CD, where you can just, you know, you just drop in bits.
Mm. And of course, I had a different version. I actually still have it. Different track listing.
Yeah.
Different running order. Some songs were different than the US version. The version I have, Here I Go Again, is not on it.
Yeah.
The first song on the record is Still in the Night.
Mm-hmm.
Over here, I think it's Crying in the Rain. So the running order is different.
Yeah. Well, I can see that a little bit too, because you figure that in the UK, you guys would have already got Here I Go Again off of Saints and Sinners.
Yeah.
Granted, it's different sounding, but you would have had it there. That's why, like,
and Crying in the Rain, that's on the same record.
So when I got 87, I was like, wait a minute. Is this song from Saints and Sinners?
Yeah, it's Kalodner.
You know? But you got that, you know, but there it's like more heavy, you know, John Lord on the organ, and it's different, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think the Blue Murder album was, I absolutely love that record.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think that's a great sounding record.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing about that record, and as good as Sykes was as a vocalist, I think they needed a singer.
Yeah.
And I know we've spoken to Tony Franklin and Carmine about it, but they tried up a bunch of singers. I think Ray Gillum was one of them.
Yeah.
And he was the closest to getting the gig. Now you can imagine that, those songs with fucking Ray Gillum singing them. Like, would have been like otherworldly. Like, fuck me, it would have been amazing.
Yeah. But it's still, I think it sounded,
it's a great record.
I think it sounded good, you know? And I mean, honestly, the last time I saw Sykes live was when he was fronting that Thin Lizzy tour.
Yeah.
And he actually did great.
I saw him when he did that, but when was it for you? And who was in the lineup? Because I don't know whether you had the same lineup as the one I saw. Because I saw him in Dublin now.
Yeah, no, I saw him down in Boston at the pavilion on the seashore.
Okay.
He was opening for, I think he was opening for Chickenfoot. Either it was Chickenfoot or it was Deep Purple. I can't remember. Because it was back a ways.
Oh, they were opening?
Yes.
Oh, okay. They were headlining when I saw
them. Yeah. I think it was Chickenfoot, though.
So I saw them in Dublin before I moved here, and I moved here November 2010. So I think I probably would have seen them around 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was Sykes on guitar, it was Scott Gorham, Marco Mendoza, Tommy Aldridge, and I think Darren Wharton was on keyboards.
I can't remember who was on boards, but I think everybody else, that's the lineup that I saw as well. And now that I'm thinking, I'm second guessing myself whether it was either of those two or if they were opening for King's X. It was back a while.
Thin Lizzy opening for King's X?
Uh-huh.
No, I can't see that. Even though it's not a Linnet version of the band.
Yeah, I think it might have been. I might have been King's X.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, he did a great job. I mean, I know there were a lot of people that were like, but it's like, well, Phil's not alive and he's trying to do something, and, you know.
When I saw them, and they're in the Olympia in Dublin, a really old theater. I really, really did enjoy the show, but it was very metal. Lizzy were never really, to me, a metal band, right?
Yeah.
And then with Tom, as good a drummer as Tommy Aldridge is, mm-hmm. he's a fantastic drummer.
It is. And he did a great solo. Downey swing.
But I saw Thin Lizzy, or Ricky Warwick's version of Thin Lizzy, in the Songus in Lowell down the street here,
mm-hmm.
and it had Brian Downey.
Yeah.
And you could just tell the difference just in having him in the band. With you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
It had the swing.
Yeah. And Aldridge, also,
Tommy doesn't have that.
And Tommy doesn't do shuffles either.
No.
And those are two things you got to have. Yeah. From the
get-go with Downey playing, they started off with the rocker. I could tell straight away it was like, this is like 70s Lizzy, not Thunder and Lightning Lizzy.
Right. Yeah.
We're going on a tangent here about Sykes. off, but of course then Sykes did Nothing But Trouble record, which I thought wasn't as good as the debut. And then he brought out these records in Japan, solo albums.
Yep.
And they weren't that easy to get.
No, I'm pretty sure I have Bad Boys Live.
That's
on
a great
CD.
But that's a great album.
Yeah.
Because he does the Whitesnake stuff on that as well.
Yeah.
But and then everyone knows he just fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Ended up on That Metal Show with talking about a project with Mike Portnoy, and nothing ever came of that. And Portnoy did the Winery Dogs with Billy Sheen. And then there was bits and pieces came out, an odd song here or there came out.
I think 2013, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, I think he's
back.
And from all accounts, the album was done. He signed, I think it was with Golden Robot Records.
Okay.
I believe years ago, they were talking about signing him and bringing the record out, and of course, nothing ever happened with that. And you know, I used to put up on the Facebook page every January, who's going to bring out new music first, John Sykes or Vinnie Vincent? and then, of course, Sykes, you know, just this post came up, he died. And seemed to me that, like, you know, there was never any... I never heard anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of musicians seem to be shocked as well. They might have known and they're feigning being shocked, but I think the shock on a lot of them was genuine.
Well, I think, I mean, we've talked to Carmine, right? We've talked to Tony, and they both had kind of the same thing, which is that, like, they're friends.
They loved it. Yeah, they really did like
the guy. They just really haven't seen him.
Yeah.
But there's no bad blood. There's nothing like that. And you know, it was no situation like that, but it just seemed like that was, he just kind of went away.
I think one of the things Carmine said has always stood with me. He said in one of the interviews we did that John was one of these guys that he was waiting for the music business to revert to the way it used to be.
Yeah.
And that was never, ever going to happen where you had all these major labels throwing a shit ton of money and you were going on big tours.
Yeah. No.
That was never, ever going to happen. It was either, you know, you had to adapt to survive.
Yeah.
And he just didn't want to do anything.
It won't. I mean, now look at what they do. They're able to pay the artists peanuts, and they make shitloads. And even a couple weeks ago, I had to go to the dentist for a filling. So I'm sitting in the chair and I'm waiting for the Novocaine to take effect, and they're just playing like modern stuff, and I don't ever listen to it. So now I'm kind of captive, and I have to listen to it.
Ugh.
So I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to spend the time trying to, like, how do these produce, and, like, what are they doing? And I just decided I'd just kind of do a producer exercise listening to the song.
I would have said, just knock me out.
And it was – and I'm like, oh, my God. They must be making a fortune, because it was an unvarying drum beat the entire way. The bass would change every so often. There was an almost unvarying guitar, if there was one, and there was a keyboard pad, and they were so incredibly simplistic. It was ridiculous. And then a vocal aid on top. And then the next one, it's like, it's the same thing. It's the same. And all of them, they were all the same
it's
way.
Probably not all done by AI or something.
And I just couldn't believe it, like how simplistic they were. And with all of that, and knowing the number of tracks and everything that are on there, I'm like, they are making a goddamn fortune, and they don't have to pay tour support or anything. And they don't have to make it memorable, because in a year you'll forget it and it won't matter. They've made their money and move on.
Mm.
So in a way it has reverted back to the way things were in the late 40s and 50s where Neil Bogart, from Casablanca. That's what he came from, right? Buddha Records was just little bubblegum pop, put it out, make the money, let it
singles.
Be forgotten. Over and over.
Not
and over
albums,
again.
Yeah. Singles.
So in a way, John got his wish. It got reverted back to that way. But I don't. I think it went back too far.
Yeah. But and it's always the the labels and all those other people get make the vast majority of the money and not the artists.
Why they do it.
That hasn't changed.
But yeah, I was blown away when I heard it. I was like, oh, God damn it.
A couple of things to finish on with Sykes. Do you think that record will ever get released now?
I doubt it.
Why?
Because it probably is going to get caught up in some kind of a probate about who actually owns it, what they can do with it.
Yeah. It's a pity. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know now, because it's all about catalog with bands now.
Uh-huh.
Are we going to see this rush to release a lot of the re-releases, other stuff now with live tracks and maybe, you know, that. Was there Blue Murder stuff recorded? Well, I'm not. Coverdale has done it with the 87, you know, the box set.
Correct.
I don't think there's going to be anything there.
He's got a lot more to draw on in doing those. And they're very well done.
They're very well done. Because Sykes is on the slided in one.
Yeah.
The box set on that. Yeah. So he's all over the live stuff.
Every single one of those is very well done.
Yeah.
But, and they pack a lot of stuff. And yeah, I can't say enough good stuff about those.
Yeah, like some of the Blue Murder stuff now. I'm not saying a vinyl box set of Blue Murder, but will they re-release that now and they have this live show? Because I think a lot of people are going to be nostalgic about that now, and they'll you know, they're huge fans of Sykes. And
I will say that first Blue Murder album, that's actually sells for quite a bit if you can find one.
On vinyl?
Yeah.
I have two of them.
Yeah,
yeah, I bought it the day it came out.
Yeah, they are a much wanted vinyl.
What are they going for?
You can see some of them listed for. I could check right now on Discogs, but they're over $100.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they're, and if they're in even better condition, they can go for more. And if it's the Japanese pressing, wow.
And mine's the European pressing. And the other thing is, if someone asked you what album to start with Sykes, what one would you pick?
Focus. I actually would probably say Blue Murder.
Yeah.
Because that's the one where he is probably in the most control. If I was to have someone go and like, depending on where they are in their musical experience, but have them go to like listen to Spellbound, they'd be like, what the fuck is this? You know, but because you need to know the context of where Tigers were at that point, where everybody else was at that point, and you go, God, fantastic damn album back in 81.
And the thing with that album and with Lizzie is it's two guitarists.
Yes.
With Blue Murder, it's all him.
Yeah.
And all the vocals are him.
Yeah. So but it's also, he's very much, more. I mean, you've got good ensemble players with Tony and Carmine.
Oh yeah.
And they've always been, right?
Oh, fantastic.
But you're able to have almost an unconstrained Sykes on that album as well, where with Whitesnake, like you said, you know, slide it in, it's already written. He's got a lot more input on 87, but only to a point. So, you know, that does get tempered. So he gets used a lot, but there is always going to be that.
Well, if someone was to pin me up against the wall and say, right, a box set with Sykes for the Blue Murder debut album, what would I want on it? I'd want, they must have demoed more than 9 songs, right? They also had Cozy Powell around for a while before Carmine.
Yeah.
Right. So they would have recorded stuff with him. Some of the auditions I'd love to hear. If some of these songs surface with Ray Gillen singing some of the demos.
That stuff's probably gone.
I know. But, well, you never know. Because I remember we spoke to Mike Fraser and a little bit to Bob Rock about it, that, you know, that process went on for a while.
Yeah. But tape's expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive and it takes a lot of room.
You know?
And yeah, some of it may exist, but it also may exist, you know, in the vaults, in the Iron Mountain facility, in some unmarked box that eventually someone will be looking for something and go, oh, what the hell is this? And put it on and go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because they almost daily, they will find crap like that.
Where they'll, and they would have done some TV appearances. They might they did a lot of live shows for the first record. I'm sure some of them might have been recorded. They might have been like a radio, you might have been recorded for a local radio station or something like that. Because you see all these vinyl copies from all these bands, you know, Thin Lizzy live in 77 recorded for the Chicago radio station or something like that. You see all these popping up everywhere.
Most of those, they're, can't really call them bootlegs, but they're not official releases, and they're not coming out from U.S. companies.
Either. No.
Well, they're made in Europe.
But they sound pretty good because they were recorded for radio.
Correct.
Yeah, so I wouldn't mind seeing if there's any of those around.
And some of them are, you know, they're actually taken from radio specials. Like, I've got radio specials from when I was on the radio.
Yeah.
And it's an album. And so someone just took that and made a new album out of it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
And then you have to understand that there's a certain amount of cost to that. So they're going to go, okay, we're going to have to pay someone or somebody or, you know, multiple people to archive all this stuff.
Is it worth
clean it up? Yeah. How much is all this going to cost? How much are we going to net when we get all this done?
Exactly. It's not about getting it out there. It's about how much money we're going to make for a lot of people.
You know, we have to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, right? We look at it from the music point of view. Right. Like, we want to hear it.
Right.
The suits want to know how much money we're going to make. Right. I might even want to listen to it. I just want to know the bottom line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But anyway, yeah, John Sykes gone at 65.
Yeah, that's way too early.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what are we on to next? We're going to talk about Nico McBrain?
Yeah, I was surprised on that. I think they handled it pretty well in that. I think a lesser band would have announced it earlier while they were still on tour or even before the tour and tried to – this Kiss would have done this, right? They would have been like, it's Ace's final tour. And how many more tickets can we potentially, even so they sell very well anyways, but how much more could you have jacked the price up and sold more? Because it would be the last time you see Nico on tour, right? But they didn't do that. They completed the tour, and before they went to the next one, it was he's done touring.
Well, I'll give you one of the reasons I don't think for me that they didn't do that. Bruce Dickinson did that on the Fear of the Dark tour, and announced way before the tour was done that he was leaving. And it caused a lot of friction in the band. If you read Mick Wall's book, of the band were pissed saying Bruce wasn't put.
Like, I'm done, like sayonara, right?
No, but the problem some of the band members had was he knew he was leaving, so some nights he'd half-ass it. And then when he was in LA, it was a great show, but when he was in a smaller market, he didn't put on the same type of show. And
it
pissed the other band members off.
I mean, Nico did awesome every show. And I just think they were classy and not being like, it's Nico's final tour. They made it like it was any other tour. And after the tour was done, they were like, yeah, Nico won't be touring anymore.
Yeah.
Very, you know, still going to be recording, you know, still managed by Ron Smallwood, and like all of that.
You think he's going to still record?
Yeah.
With Maiden, you do?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. Yeah.
You think they're going to make another record?
Yeah, it might be forgettable, but yeah.
They might have, the way Maiden do things, they might have already done it. They might have already made it.
You know, but I just think, like I said, I like the way they did it. I can understand it. You know, he's had some health issues as well, and it's, you know, drummers, it's a tough damn job, right?
He's 72.
And, you know, the last show I saw him on for this tour, he was fantastic. I want to say that was like a week before they made the announcement or something. It wasn't that much before.
Mm. 42 years at the band.
Yeah.
82 he joined.
Yeah. Like I said, I just think it was classy the way they did it. They handled it really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're dealing with a band like that's a huge band. And To me, they're very like AC/DC, very like Van Halen. Massive band, very close inner circle. Mm-hmm. If you're in the inner circle, you'll know things. If you're outside the inner circle, you know fuck all.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way Maiden have operated for years.
Yeah.
And it's worked for them. And uh-huh. It worked for Van Halen, and it worked for AC/DC. But, you know, I'm sad to see Nico go, but fuck me, like 42 years is a fantastic innings. He's played on every show. He's been on every record, and playing that material is not that easy. And Maiden shows are long.
Yeah.
And their tours are long. Like some of their early tours in the 80s were fucking enormous tours.
Yeah. Yeah.
That nearly broke up the band, but you know.
And they didn't go out and get some big name guy.
Yeah, I was going to
play some.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to get
somebody
to that.
Else who's
Simon Dawson.
Yeah, so it's kind of like I'm sure everybody in the band knows him, right? I can't see that you know Harry is keeping British Lion completely away from Maiden or vice versa. You know, so it is like in a way, you know, bringing Stevie Young into AC/DC, you know, kind of a thing. He's been around. He's been part of the family. They're familiar with each other. So. You know, I think it was pretty good. They didn't go out and get some, you know, they didn't bring Gene Hoglan in to, you know, take over drums, you know. So
I don't think that any of the other band members in Maiden outside of Steve Harris had any say at all in who was drumming in the band. It's Steve's band. Steve decided, I know it's Simon Dawson. He's drumming with Maiden now. And the other guys went, okay. Huh. I think that's the way it all went down.
You got to figure this way, right? Dave, he's kind of like
and whatever. I'm not knocking Steve, and I'm not knocking the band.
On every tour, and I'm happy, and I'm playing my shit. Like Dave is always the chin up, steady as they go, unflappable, go through it. Right? I think Yannick is probably like, they kept me. I still got the gig. He's not going to rock the boat, right? And hey, they still put up with me even though I fell down on stage. And then, you know, the only one it might be Adrian being like, what the fuck, you know? But yeah, I just, and you're right. It is, you know, ultimately I think Steve makes the call.
Can you imagine?
But it is important. I will say this. It is important that relationship between the drummer and the bass player. I mean, they are that engine house. And if they can't, if they don't know how to cue off of each other, it's very detrimental to a band. So it is a good thing that he's like, yeah, I can play with this guy. I've played with him for a long time and we can sync up just like I did with Nico. So that is good from a musical performance perspective. It was a good call.
Yeah. Just wanted to back to Nico just for a minute. I know most people on here who listen to us, they're probably more versed with Nico and Maiden and how good a drummer he is at Maiden.
Yeah, but not Trust.
I highly recommend listening to the Pat Travers records with Nico on them. Different drumming style.
Sure.
It just proves that like Nico could play anything.
Uh-huh.
Not just straight ahead metal hard rock.
Yeah.
Like you got to, Pat Travers is a completely different style of player.
Yeah, it is.
Than the Maiden stuff, and Nico just pulls it all off.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on with his drumming with Pat Travers.
Yeah.
I think he did two records with him and they're fantastic. But yeah, 72 years of age, retired from the band, from touring.
Yeah, I mean, drummers like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Kenny Aronson's another one, you know, where who he's playing with, you can see him playing with, you know, a lot of people know him like from playing with Mellencamp. Then you go and you look at, watch him play with Satriani.
Like Kenny Aronoff you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's different, you know? It's like, well, yeah, he can, wherever he is, he can fit that in. And you're like, is that the same guy?
That's why he's a session guy and commands a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he's, because he goes in, does his shit, knows his homework.
Yep.
Does his shit and gets out.
Yeah, he's good. So, yeah, and the same thing. Yeah, Nico's another one who can just go ahead and do whatever needs to be done. He knows the vocabulary.
Mm.
Yeah. But it is going to be weird that, like, holy crap, next time I go see Maiden, it's not going to be Nico.
How many? Yeah, let's go there. How many other guys have to leave that band other than Steve or Bruce for you to go, I'm out? you're probably going to say, I'm okay if Yannick leaves, aren't you? That's probably because 99%.
Somehow my eyes get stuck on Yannick's
right,
side.
Just say Dave Murray decided he didn't want to do it anymore.
God, that'd be tough. It was tough when Adrian left, to be honest. It was really tough when Adrian left. But yeah, it wouldn't seem like the same band without Murray.
Yeah. I think a lot of people wouldn't mind if Yannick left, but I think, yeah, Dave or Adrian, I think at this stage.
Yeah.
And like the thing you have to realize that like Bruce and Adrian, they've been back in the band since what, 99? 25, they've been back in the band 20 something years.
Yeah.
And then people go, fuck me, it hasn't been that long. And I'm like, yeah, it has.
Yeah, it has.
You know?
Of course, the other thing with them too, which is good, is they're back in the band, but they've continued to do all kinds of extracurricular stuff as well.
Oh, I can't wait for that Smith Kotzen record that comes out in March.
Yeah.
I thought the first debut album was brilliant. Yeah, I might try and see if I can get one of them on and talk to him about that. But just that album with Richie just shows a whole different side of Adrian than he does with Maiden.
Yeah, it does.
And, you know, it's great. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Dave Murray's never done anything.
No, like I said, I think he's just...
Yannick hasn't really done that. Yannick had Gillan and some White is a White Spirit.
Yeah.
But they were before Maiden, and then he did Bruce, and then ever since he joined Maiden, he's done nothing.
Right.
Steve really is the only one doing anything, and Bruce with the solo records.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens in Maiden. I hope they bring out another record. Will Nico play on it? I don't know. I hope he does.
And, you know, and then the other part is that they will, you know, they've got that new tour, and that's going to be like...
That's the 50th anniversary tour.
The way they're saying it is that there's going to be a lot of stuff that they'll play on this tour and they'll never play again. So it's like, okay, so what's up for another album? Are they going to go deeper into...
The early stuff or the newer stuff?
Well, are they opting to say, okay, on this tour... There's things where we're going to be, we're never going to play, you're never going to hear us play Charlotte the Harlot live again. Like, you're not going to, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that, nope, don't ask anymore. We're not playing these. We're done. We're moving on to newer stuff. You know, are we going to have albums that are also more indicative of just like, this is what we do now. We're more progressive.
It doesn't matter what Maiden does. People will fucking bitch about their set list. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the difference is... At one point, people got used to going to Maiden, and you got a good blend of everything.
Yeah.
Then, I want to say that it was with A Matter of Life and Death, where it was, okay, this tour, this is what we're doing. The next tour, you'll get hits. The next tour after that, it's going to be the album. And they were, and that was like a, what? Because you do kind of want to have some continuity. I like the fact you hear new stuff. But you do want to have to hear some other things, too, that you may not be as familiar with as a new album. But now, if you were to tell me that they were going to go out and tour and they were going to do nothing but Shinzitsu, I'd be, I'm staying home. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that would be the same way.
Yeah. But you vote with your feet. You vote with your wallet. It's as simple as that.
But I'm just saying is that I think that this may be one of those things where they're going to be... Yep, a lot of those oldies that we would have had in rotation, we're telling you right now, you were never hearing them again.
Yeah, but how long has that band got left? Seriously. Like, you might say you might never hear that again. They probably have 3 or 4 years and they're done.
You don't know that, though.
They're in their mid-60s. Nico was 72.
Yeah. But except for Bruce, they don't run around and like they do. Well, Yannick does. But you see Dave Mosian, you see Adrian Mosian. They're not running around. They're not doing all the stuff they were doing back in 82.
They're still traveling a lot, though.
They are, but they're traveling in comfort.
Yeah, I don't know. I think...
When you've got a tight machine like them, where you can get in your own damn jet, land, be catered over, you know what's going to happen every day, and it's... easy touring as opposed to being, in your 70s and you're on a bus.
Yeah, I suppose.
And you never know what the catering is going to be when you show up at the gig or if there's going to be any or when's the next time you're going to see a decent bed. yeah, then it's going to get like, yeah, this isn't going to go on for very long. But in a way, and I kind of make light of it a bit, but it is like they have a big, giant extended vacation.
And they get paid for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, and they're not going to, you know, East Podunk. You know what I mean? They're going to key major markets. That's what they're hitting.
Yeah.
Just like Metallica does.
I just think that Maiden, 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 at the most, and then they're done. I just think Steve will just say, I'm done, I'm finished.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I think. What Steve is, must be 65, 66. I can't see him doing it 10 years from now. I just can't.
I mean, the guy's in incredible shape.
He is,
know?
But...
And he, I mean, this is his life.
Age catches up with everybody. I can see them doing one more record after that. I can't see Iron Maiden doing 2 or 3 more albums. I just can't.
No, I won't be surprised if they do.
Yeah. I just don't think they're going to be around long enough because that's 3 or 4 Maiden albums. Maiden albums, that's at least 10 years. Their albums now are 5 years apart.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years apart. So I just don't see it. But you going to go and see them? Are they over here this year?
They have not, to my knowledge, announced any dates on this new tour in the U.S. yet.
Okay. All right. Just in Europe, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they're playing Dublin.
But if they Belfast. Do, yeah, I'll probably try to get tickets.
Yeah, I haven't seen Maiden for a few years. I haven't seen a lot of bands for a few years.
I mean, the Legacy of the Beast one, I saw 2 shows on that tour.
Yeah, I think the last Maiden show I saw was, they were promoting Book of Souls. What was that, 8, 9 years ago? I never great, but yeah. So anyway, Nico, thanks for the music, buddy.
Yeah, well, great hopefully drummer. We have more. You know, we have to go get some ribs or something.
Yeah.
All right. Lots of stuff, I think, this week. Like, wow, we kind of cavalcade of stuff this week. So, I don't know. I think that probably makes a good 601.
Yeah. Yeah. 602 in 2026.
We don't want to over-talk for the first one in 2025, you know. So, that would be, yeah. So, all right. Well, with that, that's all. Stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself
and me,
have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.